not last. It's not surpassed.
It used to be a newspaper.
The Butt Podcast. Not outclassed. Wonders en masse.
Get it on Manchester Road after the end of the game.
The Butt Podcast.
The Buff Podcast. My name's Mark Isles, and I'm the chief football writer of the Bolton News. Pack away your sun cream, put your Bermuda shorts and sandals back in the cupboard. The summer doesn't start until May the 18th. Deal with it. On the show this week, luck of the draw. Have Wanderers blown their top two chances? Bod news. Yon Daddy's season is over. Will we see him in a Bolton shirt again? Taken out. No risks on Santos, Jones and Sheehan, but was it the right call? And which former Wanderer now makes £35 million a year? It's not me, I can tell you that much. It's on the Buff.
Bolton's strategy for returning to the Premiership includes the cunning plan of wearing the same colours as the referee. It worked against Port Vale's defenders, they hesitated, Alan Thompson swept through, Bolton in front after 23 minutes. To be honest though, Bolton didn't need an extra man, they were comfortably the better side. That is until 18 minutes from the end. A deflection off the man in black, not the ref, but a Bolton defender, Tony Naylor, scored for Port Vale. Port Vale 1, Bolton Wanderers 1 is how it finished.
Right, before we get going on the show, it's time for the hard sell. And this week you can get 5 months of unlimited Bolton Wanderers articles from the Bolton News for just £5, and that will take you all the way through the summer and, touch wood, all the way to the Championship. You'll get access to our special supplement at the start of May as well, and that could be a playoff supplement, it could be a promotion supplement, we just don't know yet, but all the features, all the new podcasts we've got planned for the season, and most importantly of course, we'll be helping to keep local journalism thriving in the town. Go to theboltonnews.co.uk/subscribe or follow the notes in this very podcast for more details. £5 for 5 months of unlimited Bolton Wanderers articles. Okay, it is time to introduce my co-host and a man who says he's going to treat this podcast like Shrewsbury treated the game on Tuesday night. Therefore, this week's episode, folks, will be 9 hours long. Mr. Henry Hewitt, how are you doing, Henry?
It'll be 9 hours long, but it'll be effective.
Yes, they get there in the end. I mean, oh, God. Very briefly off air, we just basically summed up that we're both peeved, really, after the two results this week. 1-1 against Portsmouth, 2-2 against Shrewsbury. Two draws, you know, a brilliant performance against Pompey, not so much against Shrewsbury. But neither result any good to Bolton, really.
No, it's not. The Portsmouth game, obviously, they played really well. And they were actually, I thought, just unlucky, you know, at the post a few times and whatever. And I was thinking after the game, I thought, this could be the best thing to happen to Bolton. Because let's think about it. Bolton don't do well or don't like being in the driving seat, as what I can see. So I thought, well, you know, they get a draw against Portsmouth. Everyone goes into the Shrewsbury game and thinks, oh, well, like no one was talking about we're going to smash these and smash Port Vale. People were like, yeah, it might be still on, it might not be. I thought that's perfect because you beat Shrewsbury, then Cambridge beat Derby and we beat Port Vale. And then you go into the last game, and I would trust Bolton to go into a one game situation knowing they need to win. I would trust them to do that. I think it's when they've got 6 games and they're in the driving seat, that's when they worry and struggle. So that was my theory, and I thought, brilliant. Well, this is great, and I can go on the podcast and say that, and everyone will be like, oh, yeah, well said, Henry. Oh, Henry, you're really, you're really smart. You've got it all nailed on.
Does that ever happen? Has that ever happened to you? I'm not sure anybody's ever said that about anything I've said on here.
No, I do mean when, you know, a tongue in cheek, and when they're listening, they won't come and say it to me, but they'd go, you know, there'd be people would be on the morning commute on Friday going, oh yeah, go on, Henry, yeah, you're right there. And then my theory went out the window because they dropped the ball on Tuesday. So So now we're back to clinging on to, well, Cambridge could beat Derby and we could beat Port Vale 5-0 and then that's it. And it's like...
Are you clinging on to that? I mean, I sit here now and I keep on looking at the league table and trying to work out what would be acceptable on Saturday and what would give them any sort of hope and, you know, what type of mood are Carlisle going to be in when they go to Derby on the last game of the season. Paul Simpson's the manager there. He's a big Derby County guy. You know, there's loads and loads of things that make me think, is it worth just wrapping your head around the fact that it's the playoffs right now rather than experience that kind of big disappointment and falling off a cliff at a time you really don't want it to happen?
Yeah, I'm resigned to the playoff. I mean, you could Derby have gone to Northampton and lost. They've gone to Wickham and drawn. So, you know, they have gone to this type of team and not won recently. But for me, we've had our chances. We've had a few chances and we've blown them. And this goes back to February. So, you know, I spoke at the time after the Wigan game about a weak mentality. Mm. I don't think they've done much to... They've had the odd occasion in the last 6 weeks where they've you know, they've shown me different, but I think overall, I think the other night showed that. So I don't think we deserve any more chances, to be honest. I think, you know, third, and this is, we'll react to this at the end of the season, I think third is obviously an improvement on last year, so we have improved year on year, but... for what they wanted to do, and that was really, it was automatics. You know, they have failed on it, but I still think, I think Peterborough are the danger team in the playoffs, you know, and maybe Oxford actually, because they'll be a bit wounded after what happened when we played them. But again, we'll speak about that when it actually gets to the playoffs, but yeah, I don't see us getting another chance. That theory could happen and Derby could lose and we could beat Port Vale 5-0 because I think they've resigned themselves to going down now. But I just don't see it happening. I think part of me wants Derby to win on Saturday just to get it over and done with.
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference between being a bad team and being inconsistent. And I think it's the latter that Bolton fall into because we've seen this season on a good handful of occasions them play the type of football the kind of compelling type of performance that does befit a promotion winning team. There is reason for the confidence because they can be that good. But it's a gigantic but. I mean, I'm not looking in the mirror, honestly. It's inconsistency. It's the every once in a while they throw in a performance that really just comes out of complete nowhere and it takes a while to fix. And I think that's the major problem, is that it's peaks and troughs, it's highs and lows. Footballers and managers talk all the time about you managing the highs and managing the lows. I'm not sure Bolton necessarily do that well. They produce the highs and lows. It seems to be one extreme or the other. There's no mechanical consistency that we saw from Portsmouth that we've seen generally from Derby. I think they're a bit flakier than Portsmouth. I would say that the fact that Derby look like they're going to go up automatically tells you what an average league this has been this season, because I don't think Derby are a great team. And I don't think there are particularly anybody in the playoffs at the minute that massively worry me, but then that's famous last words as well, because Bolton are still capable of throwing in those ridiculous performances. So it's very hard. It's hard to be really, really angry at it because they're just an inconsistent team. And, you know, you start throwing in all the excuses about injuries and you know, reconfigured matches and all the cup things and all that kind of stuff. That's for the summer. That's a conversation probably for the summer. But this week they had a chance to claim it, to really put some pressure on. And as you put it, they dropped the ball. And, you know, Shrewsbury was the big one for me. Pompey performance, I think 99% of the supporters in that crowd applauded the team off because they saw the performance was there. It was just that little bit of luck in front of goal, that little bit of clinical finishing in front of goal. The Shrewsbury one, there's really no excuse, even with those players that were missing. And, you know, there's really no excuse.
No, you're right. And you can, again, you can look at the referee, you can look at the amount of time added on and whatever, and that's, again, that's a different sort of conversation, and we all agree that it was a farce. But, like, you have to, and this is it, this has been the problem with Bolton all season, or most of its games that they haven't won. You have to find a way. Big teams, like, if you think about on Tuesday, at one point, Bolton, Peterborough and Portsmouth were all losing, and two of those won. And the others didn't. And I think that comes down to Fleetwood missed two penalties, I think. So there was a bit of luck in that game. Portsmouth, to the credit, and I said last week, I still think we've got the best team in the league. You know what? It doesn't matter because they've come to our stadium and ground out a draw, which even their manager said they did. Mm-hmm. And then they've needed to get a result against Barnsley at home to win promotion, and they've gone and done it. They've turned it round and done it, and that's what they've done all season. And okay, their season's been littered with more one goal wins and than not, and Bolton have had the 5-0s and 7-0s and whatever, but they're champions. They've gone up, they won't be bothered, whereas Bolton, like you said, it's either a barnstorming 5-0, 7-0, 5-2 performance and they really click, or they don't. And this was it on Tuesday. I just think, for me, little moments of the game, and again, you could say, oh, well, there's four injuries, but little moments in the game, twice in the last week we've been hit on a counter-attack, if you will, and they've scored. And then the Bolton equalise, and then within, 2 minutes, they allow them to... It was a hell of a strike, I'll give him that, but it was still poor mentality. And
it was a corner that they'd gone through in training. It was a corner that they'd been shown specifically. They'd done it a couple of weeks ago against Wickham. So again, you know, whilst it was a good strike, it was poor, full stop.
Oh, there you go. They've not listened, and it's a mentality thing. And you go in at half time losing 2-1. And yeah, it's, you know what, the thing for me is, and this is where I am with this team, is that, and I'm not condoning betting, because obviously I did lose in the end, but my mentality was going into that game, Shrewsbury were 2-1 not to lose that game, and I put a fiver on it. And then at half time, I cashed out for a tenner and put that money on Bolton to win at 15-8. So, like, you know, this is where I am with this team, is that I go into it going, I'm not 100% confident in what we're doing in big games. But then when you get into it, you're like, and this is a fan, you go, oh, yeah, we'll turn this around. So, yeah, it was doubly disappointing. I might as well have thrown that fire. I might as well have gone and bought you a coffee, Mark.
Well, you could have done. And that would have been much, much well seen. If you just want to buy me a coffee, I'm in Starbucks pretty much all the time. Anyway, yeah, I mean, the big talking point probably from Tuesday, aside from the drop points, was the fact that there were team changes made. Now, four changes made. One of them, not much we can do about that one. Yom Dadibavarsan, calf injury that looks like he is now out for the season. And we'll get on to him in a moment. But the three who were taken out of the firing line, Josh Sheehan, Ricardo Santos, Gethin Jones, big, big players for Ian Evert. Sheehan sat on the bench but was never going to play a part. Santos and Jones rested, all three of them carrying injuries. And that decision was taken on medical advice to take them out the firing line. Now, in a game of such importance, a few people have said, was that the right move? Was that the right call? What do you think?
Well, Sheehan was warming up in the second half, so I thought he was going to come on. I don't know whether that was just to...
dire emergency, if that were the case, yeah.
Yeah, so I weren't quite sure on that one, but yeah, the thing is, again, is that, and I don't blame Evert for this, is that he will look at his squad and think this team can beat Shrewsbury. Mm. And you look at the players that came in, I thought Dempsey, first half was off the ball, but then second half I thought he was trying to make things click and making the runs. Jones is Marmite with a lot of the fan base. Like on Saturday, I sat next to someone who was saying that Jones, he just doesn't like Jones. Whereas I think he adds something, and I think he could have added something
Well, the people have been calling for Forrester, and you know, I quite like him as a player, but he did not play well on Tuesday night.
No, exactly. So as that turned out, you would have rather have Jones. Obviously, Santos, I mean, you can see two goals. You've got to question whether that would have happened with Santos, and maybe there's a bit more authority in there. Bodvarsson missed a shocking chance on Saturday, which made sure we didn't win the game. But I don't particularly, and Jerome scored, so I guess that was vindicated. But you'd look at those players that came in and think they will win this game, and I'm sure the manager thought that, and it just didn't happen. If Charles and Onwuendelu were, or maybe not Onwuendelu because Collins would have played, but if Charles were a bit more fitter, he would have played. So I think it just happened at the wrong time. But again, those players are good enough to win that game. They're good enough not to concede two in that game, and they're good enough to have got it over the line. And now we're having a very different conversation, but we're not. And that's the facts of it. It was just very disappointing. I don't think when teams are making it difficult like Shrewsbury did, you can't be giving them two goals because it just plays into their hands, and that's what we did.
We'll go on to Bodvarsson then, because his calf injury looks like he's not going to play again this season. It does coincide, of course, with Deion Charles coming back. Dan Onwuendelu is also back again. He got a few minutes against Shrewsbury. Victor Adebiejo isn't far away as well, so that's a good thing. But Bodvarsson, he's had a very hot and cold season, but he's out of contract in the summer. I think he's 30 years old, maybe 31 years old now. Would you look to keep hold of him for next season? Is that the last we're going to see of him in a Bolton shirt, which would be a crying shame?
Yeah, I'm glad he had an extra year with us. I think he's played a lot more than what I thought he would do. I'll give him credit with that. I thought he'd be, he'd play, 15, 20 games and he'd be injured the rest of it. So he's played a lot more. I think if you look at Bolton now, we've got two options what we're going to do. We're going to either be in the Championship or we're not. I think if we're in the Championship, I don't think he has experience in the Championship, but I think we should be looking at different options. I think he even though he scored, 10 goals, is it, or 9 goals, he's missed a lot of sitters, and you can't really afford to do that in the Championship. And if we're not in the Championship, then I think I don't think we keep him. No, I think not a massive overhaul, but I think there's questions need to be asked about a few of the players. Again, a mentality thing, and you think, well, what hasn't got us over the line? And I saw somebody on social media, as we record this on Thursday this morning, who's posted kind of the clips of Bolton sitters from this season, like the sitter of the year. And unfortunately for Bodvarsson, I think he's in about four of them. So I would say, you're probably looking at going next year. You've got Charles, Adebiejo and Onwuendelu, Collins, and then you sign someone else and there's your five, and Jerome probably goes as well. So, I mean, do you disagree or do you think he will be here?
I don't disagree. I think it's really ruthless business, isn't it? It can't be about personalities, because if you're asking for, a personality in that dressing room that kind of deserves a break and deserves a bit of an extra life, if you will, I would say that Jon would be right up there, because he does a lot and he's been a fantastic guy to work with. But I think the point you make there about that kind of ruthlessness in front of goal, I think Bolton have got too many of that type of player, in terms of you can't hang your hat on him to make sure that he gets to 15 goals, 20 goals a season. Collins and Charles are probably those people. I'd be Adebiejo with the question mark against him potentially. I'm not sure we necessarily see Jon again. I hope he gets a chance to say goodbye, and I hope that's at Wembley with a nice thunderclap a la the Papa John's Trophy as well. But it's a crying shame for him. I'm really gutted it had to happen that way, because as you say, he's played a very big part this season. He's kept working. He's still got that classy touch, and the link up play is excellent. It's just some of those chances, and it's been a season of moments. I think we're getting to know this team so well and this style of play so well that it doesn't even feel like it's results that have cost Bolton. You can actually trace it back to misses. You can trace it back to mistakes, little moments in games, and break it down even further. And that's where you kind of look at individuals, and maybe that's what happens in the summer, is that you look and you say, right, you've just got to isolate what are effectively the weak links. And yeah, well, hopefully that can be done after a victorious playoff run. But nevertheless, life goes on. Headlines continue to be written and stories continue to be posted in the Bolton News. So, Henry, bring me some headlines.
News. Well, Ian Everett, the other day, after the Shrewsbury game, was quite resound in the fact that we're not going up automatically. He said anything is possible, but you have to be realistic. This was a bit of a change in tact for Ian Everett, really, because he is a very positive guy. I was quite surprised that he'd all but given up hope. Do you think there's a hidden agenda behind what he said, or do you think he genuinely means it?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I mean, he wouldn't even say the word playoff on Thursday. A week ago, as we're talking now, he wouldn't even say the word playoff. He went all the way through the press conference without saying them. Look, I suggest he's trying to take some of the pressure off. There's two things at work here, because obviously the pressure of the last two games has told, whether it be in the finishing against Pompey or just the general play, finishing and defending, really, against Shrewsbury. The pressure has told. There is a lot of pressure on Saturday if you go into it saying, right, this is our last chance. So maybe there has been a shifting, a gear change, change down gear a little bit. The second one is, obviously, the kind of the wider aspect is that if you were to go hell for leather into this game and Derby win, that's out of your hands, you can't do anything about that. But if Derby win, then you drop off a cliff confidence-wise, don't you? And I think potentially just introducing that, it may also feed into Derby. It may also, you know, maybe just make them slightly more overconfident. Don't know. But from Bolton's perspective, I think it's important from the fan base, from the players' point of view, from the staff, everybody, that they can't have a situation where they haven't reached automatic promotion and it be a massive doom and gloom. It can't be that, because that would be self-combusting at the stupidest time imaginable. There is still playoffs, and that's kind of three games, home and away. As we said before, there's nobody in the playoffs that I'm like, oh, God, I hope we don't get them. I don't particularly fancy if Blackpool would sneak in. That would be a tricky one away from home. But really, the rest of them, Barnsley, Peterborough, Oxford, yeah, I think I give Bolton every single chance, home and away, in every single one of those games. Not really an issue. And then Wembley, to take it a step further, as I said, with the Papa John's or whatever it was called this year, if Bolton were to get there, doesn't matter who you play at Wembley, because of what happened last time, they'll be up for it. I'm very confident. It's just making sure they don't go off a cliff between now and the end of that Peterborough game. And I think maybe this is Everett's concession to it, or is starting to be. It'll be interesting to see what he says in the build-up to Port Vale now. But I think for as a supporter, from your point of view, wrapping your head around that idea of the playoffs and having to go again is quite important, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I don't know whether, to be fair, we've said this before with Ian Everett, is whatever he says he can't win, because, I didn't really see much negativity towards it. I didn't see people going, oh, he's given up hope, what's the point?
It'd be pragmatic, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And I think if he'd have come out and said, oh, we're still going to get promotion, I think people would be like,
No, you're not, Ian. You've blown it, Bottle Job FC and all that kind of stuff. You can't win. Yeah. You can't win. But also, we're measuring this against what some goon has said on social media. And let's face it, nobody's going to put out a nuanced, balanced statement on social media. It's either that you're either the worst team in the entire history of the world, or you're the greatest team in the history of the world. And very few people manage to get anywhere in between that.
Yeah, you're right, and I think that's where Bolton are at the moment with the fan base. Is that it's so funny, isn't it? How and we said at the start of the season, expectations are ridiculously high this year, and I think the manager and the team had been given some I don't want to say free passes, but I think with a vast majority of the fan base in previous years, they've gone, well, you got promoted from League Two, yeah, let's sustain in League One, let's push on, and now it's time for promotion. So this year was always the dangerous year, that if it didn't work out, then they could have problems. And, you know, I guess at this point, all Bolton can do is take it to the last day. Now, I don't think any of us expect Carlisle to go and beat Derby and us to turn round a 5-goal swing with them losing or maybe drawing one of the next two games. But that's all Bolton can do. And, you know, it's just they have got to look at the playoffs now. They have got to think. And yeah, maybe it's the best thing for Bolton that they, if they think the playoffs now, that they can start preparing for it. I unless you have a Blackpool-style capitulation where we lose 4-1 in the first leg, they're at home a second leg where they are better at home. Even this last week, it's all doom and gloom, but we still haven't lost at home. We've lost very few matches at home. So, you know, I would fancy us to go into a second leg if there's, you know, like even if we're a goal down. And yeah, you look at the other teams and you look at Barnsley have dropped off a cliff. Peterborough unpredictable. And then you'd fancy us. The only thing I wouldn't fancy is perhaps Oxford. And like I said, who have got something to prove against us. But even so, I'd expect us to beat them over two legs. And then you've got Wembley. So, yeah, I am confident going into the playoffs, but I think it might be it happening now might be the best thing for Bolton. We can all have that, you know, frustration and disappointment now, 2 weeks before the playoffs, then that could be better than, as you said, having it going off the last game at Peterborough.
Well, you've got no choice. And that's not to say, by the way, that you can't criticise the club for having not met their objective, because of course you can, and they haven't, as things stand, and I don't think they will. And I think probably the time to pick that apart and to look at exactly why that was the case is in a few weeks. Doing it now is only going to be destructive to what they're trying to achieve in the playoffs. And if they do get promotion via the playoffs, it's going to feel different anyway. I think there will still be an inquest, weirdly enough, even if they did get up, that there would still be a real thorough examination of the squad that Bolton have got and that Ian Everett goes forward with, based on what they've done in the second half of this season. But I do think that even the fiercest critic, we still want to see Bolton playing Championship football next season. And so even the fiercest critic will have to dial back just a little in this kind of, like, woe is me type of situation that we seem to be brewing here. And particularly on Saturday, it's going to be a very strange atmosphere. We'll talk about that in a bit anyway. Let's move on. Let's have another headline.
Well, one of the highlights and you were there moments for Tuesday that has kind of been forgotten about was that Cameron Jerome finally scored a league goal. Sorry, talking about betting, when I saw him start, I was like, he's going to score today. And I think Sky Bet had him at 6-4 to score. I was like, you have clearly not watched any of Bolton's games this season. No, he did score. And it was at an important time as well. And obviously, they then went and conceded. But is Cameron Jerome, the manager, and we have actually defended him, the manager said he offers quite a lot of what we don't see in the team. Is Cameron Jerome someone who needs to step forward now and needs to show maybe the younger lads in the team that it's not all over with and it's not doom and gloom? You know, use his experience a bit more.
Yeah, probably. I mean, look, he's won a lot of stuff. He's played in playoff finals before now. He's got so much experience and he speaks extremely well. And we found that on Tuesday night because it was a very tricky gig. Whoever came up those stairs to talk to the media on Tuesday, he definitely had to have the wits about them. We had it down to it's going to be George Thomason or it's going to be Cameron Jerome. And Cameron walked through the door. So And I think what he said went down well with people, because I think there was enough concession there to say, listen, you know, if we don't finish in this top two, we've not hit our target, we've not been good enough, we've got to look at ourselves. But in sort of echoing what we've been talking about, is that he said, we've just got to make sure we're the best of the rest. And if they can make sure they're the best of the rest, actually going up at Wembley is the best possible feeling. He can speak from experience. So he can. This is one of his jobs now, without shadow of a doubt. I mean, I looked at the huddle again before the Shrewsbury game. He was quite vocal in it as well. He's definitely, you know, been there, got the T-shirt type. I do think he's got a future in coaching / management or anything like that, if that's what he chooses to do. I do like Cameron. He does talk a lot of sense, and he really did have a he cut through the nonsense basically on Tuesday. It would have been easy just to come down and say, you know, we're a little bit disappointed, and you know, the lads will bounce back, and all the usual tropes that you get after a game like that. But I think he was refreshingly honest, and I think people respect that. He's put up with a lot of crap this season. Some of it has been completely unnecessary, and some of it has been downright wrong, to be honest, because I think what he's done, especially off the bench, has been quite valuable to Bolton in this second half of the season when things have really been struggling. So, I mean, I think he's got a big role to play, like you say, and there's a lot of young lads in there that won't have experienced this sort of pressure before. Last season was a different animal because Bolton never really looked like they were going to be towards the top. They really haven't sampled failure, Bolton, nor has Ian Everett. So Cameron Jerome, for me, is a really, really important guy behind the scenes now.
Yeah, you can see the impact. And to be fair to him, you know, for his age, he when he comes on, he does cover some ground, you know, at the top of the
pitch.
Isn't
he? He's very quick. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, again, he falls into the bracket of next year. Do we need, you know, I mean, there's arguments for both sides with Cameron Jerome next season. I know everyone will look at his goal tally and say no. But I guess when you've got so many strikers as we do, maybe you need that guy who's got a bit more experience and something about him and less pressure on him. But we'll have to wait and see what happens, you know, in the summer. But yeah, he definitely is someone who and I'm sure he is, you know, standing up and going, right, because he's probably been through it before. You know, for all those playoff wins he's had, there were probably chances for that team to get promoted in that season, and they've lost a few games or drawn, and they've had to come back again. So it could be that he is a really important person within that. Two other players that could be back for the playoffs and play an important role are Unlundalu and Adebiejo. We saw a glimpse of Unlundalu the other night. Adebiejo is close to fitness as well. What do you think with this one? Because for me, we've seen with Charles, it's going to take a few games for them to get back into the rhythm of it, and we don't really have many games left even in the playoffs. So is them being back, is it much of a bonus, or is it just going to be a hindrance? Because I guess Ian Everett will feel he needs to play them. He needs to give them that game time.
Yeah, it's certainly a balancing act, isn't it? I mean, he's got to get Dion Charles up to speed first. I think that's the primary objective here, is that he's got to find what his front two is going to be in a playoff final, and whether or not you think, you know, Collins and Charles can play together. You know, we've addressed that before. I still think you are lacking a marker in that, you know, lacking a bit of a physical presence. But without Bodvarsson, you are faced with only Jerome there. And so getting Dan Unlundalu up to speed, or getting Victor Adebiejo up to speed, might be even more important. I think he'll use this next two games to have a proper look at Unlundalu, see where he's at. Hopefully Adebiejo gets something at Peterborough, potentially. I'm hoping that that's going to be the time frame, and so that in the playoff finals he can steadily be kind of introduced in the same way as Dion is at the minute, and maybe be able to play half an hour in the final if need be. But I think having that different mix of strikers is going to be really important. And Lundelu and Adebayejo fall into that category of a bit of a physical presence that can play alongside Aaron Collins or play alongside Deion Charles. Just sticking Deion Charles and Aaron Collins out there, whilst attacking wise, I completely get it. It's kind of dream team esque. You are definitely losing something as well, and that's going to have to be compensated for. So, I think he's going to be playing a very wise game here. This is a real balancing act for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's. I agree with you on Charles and Collins, and I think especially if we're in League One, you're coming up with against a lot of defences that are going to be physical. And they both like to put it about. I'm not saying they don't, but I did feel at times against Shrewsbury, you're punting the ball upfield to Deion Charles, and he's not going to win a header against a 6'2"
Shea Dunkley defender. Or something. Yeah.
So. I think there is an element of that. I don't know whether they change it now, three up front, and get Collins in there, because Collins has shown for it's amazing of the difference in what people are saying after in the last few weeks. Because before then, people were questioning whether it was a good signing, and now he's scored whatever he scored, 5 in 5, and he's a real asset to us. And to be fair to Collins, at a time where we've needed someone up front to step up, he has done that. On Tuesday, in the first 10 minutes, he had 3 shots. So he has that about him that Bolton haven't quite had. We've been saying that there are times where they're trying to walk the ball in the net and you're like, just have a shot. And Collins looks like he's that guy. So he seemed to be addressing that, and that may influence other players around him as well. So I think if you going into the playoffs with, I guess at the moment, you'll hopefully have a fully fit Charles, Collins, and then Jerome. Is it enough? Possibly not. And that's where you will need Lundelu and Adebayejo off the bench to give something a bit extra. But it's so funny, isn't it? I think Steve Evans said a few weeks ago that if you just name those players, then they've got a hell of a strike force. But, when three of them are half cooked, I guess we'll wait and see. Someone needs to be a hero, Wilbraham-esque.
I'd love that if it was Dan and Lundelu, by the way, for starters, because I think the journey he's been on and the bad injury he got, the time he got it was terrible. I'd love to see him score a goal that mattered for Bolton. They're all great lads. Somebody needs to be a hero for Bolton. We know that. Somebody will be a bit hero for Bolton if they can manage to get them promotion. They'll be talking about them for years. So that's if nothing else, that is a motivation.
It is. Another guy who could be a hero, and he had a chance on Tuesday and then decided to chest it instead of head it, is Nat Ogbetta. It was an interesting chat you had with him before the Shrewsbury game about his future. Because is he out of contract at Swansea in the summer?
He is. He's out of contract, which I have to be honest with you, I didn't know for certain. Sometimes these things can be a little bit wrapped up in kind of additional years and options and all that kind of thing. But he just basically said, listen, I'm not thinking about going back to Swansea. We've had very little conversation between the club and myself about my future. I only want to get Bolton into the Championship. And he basically talked up every single aspect of being here so far, credited Bolton with helping him get kind of trust back in his body and to bring his fitness back to full strength as well, which has been great. And I think he's got probably development as a player, probably defensively, certainly. But I think going forward and what he offers from that left wing is as good as anything Bolton have got. I would not be against seeing him in a Bolton shirt next season, regardless of which division they're playing in, to be honest. How about you?
Yeah, I think attacking wise, he's offered quite a lot. He's scored a few goals. I think he's, when you look at him going down that wing, he's always looking to cross the ball in, which is great. I agree with you. I think his defensiveness, I mean, obviously he was part of the mix-up that happened for the Portsmouth goal the other day. And I think I think for me with Ogbetta, the one thing that frustrates me sometimes, and you know, it's difficult when you're looking, and I'm usually, well, I am always sat in the stand or watching it on telly. I feel he gives up on the ball quite a lot. You know, if it's a misplaced pass that's gone a yard away from him, some players will go in, like Thomason, for example, would chase it down. I think Ogbetta gives up on it quite easily, and it's. I think sometimes it's the mentality that even if you know, oh, I'm not going to get this, and he could argue, but what's the point in wasting energy? I think sometimes for the fans, you just need to just go an extra few yards, you know, just try and get it, even if you know you know, it's just a mentality thing. I think that frustrates me at times because I feel he just gives, lets the ball run out of play if it's not straight to him. But I think other than that, I think going forward, he's an asset. And you know, if you look at our fullbacks at the moment with Dacus Cogley, who congratulations to him and Sheehan, by the way, for making the team of the season.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you look at him, you look at Williams and Ogbetta, we have got a similar type of wing backs on both sides, you know, who like to get forward and cross the ball in. But then again, defensively, I mean, Dacus Cogley, I think he's a good defender, but I think defensively, there's question marks over a few, you know, what do you want from your wing backs? Do you want them to be defensive minded or do you want them going forward?
Again, oh, no, this may be something. He never wants them to go forward. I mean, I think he's happy, you know, regarding the back three, I think he's happy to stick with that and trust his defenders, particularly Santos, and to have further players further forward. I think he's always been quite straight with that. He doesn't necessarily want his wing backs to be defenders.
Well, there you go. You've just answered my question. So let's continue the way we're going. But I would, just to round that off, I would have a better back next season. I think he seems a really good guy in the interviews I've seen. And, you know, you look at his contributions goal-wise since he's come in. He has made some. You know, he's obviously scored on his debut as well. So he's done enough for me to go to warrant staying with us. So hopefully that can happen. Right, finally, the last headline, and this was the talking point from the Portsmouth game, and it was Rico Santos. He finally got a little bit of revenge over Yenge of Portsmouth, Portsmouth will argue that Yenge got his last laugh through getting promoted, but of what I've seen of this guy, he's a player that I'm sure you love having when he plays for you, but he just seems a bit of a... I don't know. He's on the wind up all.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's on the wind up all the time, isn't he? If you're playing against him, he's annoying. But one thing I did notice, and you'll be able to, you spoke to Santos about this, is did Yenge have a bit of a, when he came on as sub, did he say something to Santos or something?
He patted him on the chest and he said something along the lines of remember me or something like that. It was Rico instantly was not impressed, let's put it that way. He definitely wasn't impressed in the build up to it, all the social media clips that have been put out. Now I know Yenge didn't actually say that at that point in time, it was obviously after the game in December at Fratton Park, but it made its way back. It obviously fired Rico up. He played with a painkilling injection in his calf, for better or worse, but I don't think I've seen Ricardo Santos play that well this season. If I'm honest, I think it was arguably his best game of the year. Absolutely dominated Colby Bishop in the first instance, and then when Yenge came off the bench, as Yenge tends to come off the bench for Pompey, he doesn't start many games. Yenge gave him a little bit of friendly fire, and Rico let his game do the talking. I mean, he tends to anyway, Rico. He's not necessarily one of life's great orators or anything, but he, you know, I think sometimes potentially he can lack some motivation, maybe. Sometimes he does need to get himself fired up, and you can tell when he's like that. You know, he'll go thundering into challenges, and he'll seem to be, you know, playing on a completely different level at times. So, you know, what I would say is, if any of the strikers that are coming up against Ricardo Santos in the playoffs would like to make some disparaging comments, I'm sure we can package them together on social media and make sure that he sees them. Call him what you want, I don't mind. It would fire him up. It certainly did the trick. But yeah, I think Yenge. Look, Pompey got promotion. They deserve it. Well done to them as well, because like we said before, they've been the most consistent team bar none. And you'd argue also what that club's been through deserves a bit of time in the sun. So that's fair enough. From Bolton's point of view, we need more of that from Santos, and we need him to be fit.
Yeah, and credit to the manager as well for Portsmouth. I saw somebody say on social media about comparing Messino to Everett and saying, well, he came in 18 months ago and got him promoted. I would argue that in Everett's defence, Messino was getting Portsmouth from League One and out of League One. Everett came in and got us out of League Two. He's already in the higher division. I mean, if Messino goes and does a McKenna next year, then you could probably argue, okay, yeah, they've got maybe a point. But in Everett's defence, I wouldn't go comparing him to Messino, because Messino's just got Portsmouth from 9th or 10th to 1st, whereas Everett's technically got us from League 2 to 3rd in League 1. So, yeah, but no, credit to Port. I know there's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing on social media with the fan bases, but, you know, Portsmouth, they seem a genuine club who have been through similar. At half-time, the Supporters Trust presented their Supporters Trust with a plaque or something. I think there's a lot of similarities between the clubs, and Portsmouth are they're better in the championship. There's some awful teams in the championship that Portsmouth deserve to be in there more than them. So yeah, well done to them.
Just to pick you up on that one, Portsmouth have had 6 seasons in League One, finishing 8th, 4th, 5th, 8th, 10th and 8th. So,
He took them from 8th to 1st then.
Yeah, but it just shows you, and again, not excuse making here, but there are teams that spend so long down here. Sheffield United, kind of 6 seasons they were down here. Even going back to things like Leeds or Ipswich, spent 4 seasons down here and spent loads of money. Derby, I think this is their second season. It's just not easy. No matter what you spend, it's a bit of a graveyard. Let's get out of here. Let's just get out of headlines. Let's leave everything alone. Let's get Phil, are you at the door?
Is that Phil in Moraes? Emails, actually.
It's email time. Yeah, let's forget about the stories written this week. Let's present the floor to the true champions of the podcast, and that is the listeners. That's a cheap pop, as they say in wrestling. Okay, Stephen sent us an email. Hi, chaps, love the podcast. Great start, Stephen. For the playoffs, the club needs to get the prices right and also the seating. Barnsley last season, we didn't even get 25,000. Give the South upper to away fans and the South lower to home fans. Then make sure the match is competitively priced, including for the away fans. Even if they price the South Stand at a discount, it could work. Please, Neil Hart, make sure the ground is full. So, we've had quite a lot of discussion, haven't we, recently about the South Stand and how it may be addressed in the future, whether or not that's where the standing might go in the corner, or whether Bolton reclaim that bit for their own supporters, or they had the kind of weird half and half, top and bottom for Pompey, with the netting through the middle that somebody joked should be used for growing courgettes. So
was that you, Mark? Was that that a joke that it was you made and you've tried?
It was on my horticultural jokes. I'm just going to try and sandwich it in.
You're trying to test the room there, going, oh, yes, someone made that joke. If I laugh, go, yeah, it's a great one, isn't it?
I am chucking that on Twitter later on, definitely. There's the clip sorted. It was a weird sight seeing them top and bottom, the away fans. It was quite a throwback to Premier League days, in fact. And I like the idea of it. It certainly helps to have that kind of four-sided support. But the pricing is interesting. Last year, they were quite expensive, the tickets, as I remember. I don't anticipate they will give any team a huge amount of tickets. I think they will stick to what they gave Pompey, which is about 2,400, half that stand. I'd be very surprised if they don't stick to the same thing is in terms of splitting them top and bottom as well. How about you? I mean, you could buy top. Could you buy top and bottom for the home fans as well? I think I saw a few people sat at the top.
Yeah, against Portsmouth. Yeah, there were a few sat at the top. I would. I mean, to that email, I would actually say that last year they only give Barnsley the upper, South upper. So they did that last year.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the prices. I think playoffs is difficult because everyone it doesn't count in the season ticket, so everyone has to buy the ticket.
Yes.
So you're probably saying, make it £20. I don't know if it was 25 or something for adults, but so I would say I don't know about discounting the South Stand because, like I said, it doesn't count towards it doesn't count towards your season ticket. So people are buying tickets anyway. It's not like, if it was a season ticket match, I could understand the meaning of that, and I would say, let's do it. But when the whole stadium needs to buy a ticket, I think you're probably looking at £25 for an adult and then 15 for a concession or something. But I think a lot of what he said there in the email, we did actually do for the game last year against Barnsley. It's going to be different this year because we are in the second leg at home. So it's not going to be, I think it was a Saturday afternoon last year. So I think it'll be a midweek game, which will be, again, different. You don't know.
I think it's Friday, Saturday, the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, because Barnsley was a Friday, wasn't it? Sorry, the away game. So, because I was thinking if it was a Wednesday night, maybe there'd be less kids there, but... it's an interesting point, but again, it might all bear down to how Bolton doing that first leg, because if Bolton win the first leg, people will be going to half the people, especially those, well, definitely those in the lower tiers, will be going to that match against whoever in the second leg thinking, we're going to get on the pitch at full time. So that'll boost the crowds anyway. But yeah, we've got to get there first and then see who we're playing and then play a first leg. So we'll see.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just checking here. I'm a double check. But 3rd and 4th of May are the first two, depending on where you finish. That is Friday, Saturday. But actually, it says 7th and 8th of May here. That is Tuesday, Wednesday.
And annoyingly for me, the 3rd of May is my wife's birthday. So, that'll be fun. I've already missing the rest of the season as it is. So then, maybe I could argue that I'm missing the rest of the season for a holiday. So maybe your birthday you can give up for me to watch Bolton.
I think it's just finally time to admit you're a part-time fan, Henry. Let's just put the cards on the table.
Yeah.
We need a full-time fan to help me host next season's podcast. Henry can just come in to do the weather. we need a weather report. Actually, that's people are always taking the Michael out of me and my Matchday Live blog for starting off. I always say what the weather's like because I'm thinking, well, if people are travelling away or travelling any distance, that's one of the things that I'd want to know. What's it like there, type of thing. But yes, people seem to think I am some sort of glorified weatherman / food critic on the Matchday Live blog, and so be it. Simon has sent me another email. Hi, Mark and Henry. I completely get Evert's argument about time wasting, but do we help ourselves when we have the ball? We knock it about at the back and frequently play the ball back to our defence and keeper. At times, the pace feels very pedestrian, and even when we're chasing the game, we seem to lack urgency. I feel there's so much more we can do with possession that we have. We shouldn't be relying on getting time back, for which is wasted. Another idea would be we should introduce a rule that play continues when a player goes down injured, but trainers can come on like they do in rugby. Maybe still stop for head injuries, but the player is mandated to leave the field of play for 5 minutes minimum for an assessment, with a concussion sub allowed. So that's Simon's thoughts. Let's deconstruct that. We've done the style thing to death. Let's park that. That's not going to change. If you don't like it, I guess that you're just going to have to lump it for now, because I don't think Bolton are going to change, certainly not in the next 2 to 5 games, rather. The idea of time wasting, it's obviously raised its head because of what happened against Shrewsbury. How, across both halves they managed to only add on 9 minutes is absolutely beyond me. They were time wasting half an hour into the game. And yeah, considering where we were at the start of the season with the masses that were added on, with the stance that the PGMOL had taken, the EFL had taken on trying to curb this problem, it seems to be that the referee is just letting, willfully just ignoring that now and just letting them carry on.
Yeah, that's a joke. And we said it was going to happen. It happens every season. There's something new that comes in. It lasts 2 weeks and then it goes. And like, what, we were getting, what, 20 minutes worth of stoppage time in the first few games when we were winning both games 3-0, so it was pointless. And yet you go into 2-2. And the thing is that even if Bolton had scored and made it 3-2, I think they would have put 8 minutes on. Just because, you know, I don't know where they get it from. But the Portsmouth one as well, where they're, I mean, that, I can't remember his name, the Wigan guy, the player who played at Wigan.
Lang.
He was on the wind. Yeah, he was on the wind-up all game, so he was going to walk off. But what I don't understand is, and this goes to that, is it Udo who scored?
Yeah.
And then he went down and spent about 5 minutes down, in quotations, injured, just after that. Is that I, unfortunately, until we do something about it, I understand that players can go down to break up momentum. Goalies do it, players, their opposition do it. Though if the opposition are on momentum, they will go down, feign an injury, and then it breaks up play. What I don't, well, I say what I don't understand. It proved for Shrewsbury that it didn't matter because they got the 5 minutes anyway. But where, if you're, for me, if you're down for 30 seconds or if you're down for 6 minutes, it breaks up momentum anyway. I don't understand why you would stay down for 5 minutes if you then think, oh, it's going to be added on at the end. It wasn't, but...
But because it isn't.
Yeah,
That's why they do it.
Well, that's the thing.
It's not being punished. And the other thing is, with the Shrewsbury goalkeeper in mind, Morosi got booked when Cameron Drum scored the equalising goal at the start. So he knew then that it would take a referee with cojones of steel to produce a second yellow card for time wasting. And he made sure he time wasted as much as he humanly can. And by the way, I actually am not blaming the players. The players, every player will find a loophole. It doesn't matter what introduction you talk there, Simon talked there in his email about concussion subs and, you know, mandates to leave. They find a way around it. Everybody would be feigning head injuries or that kind of thing. The football players will find a way around it. I think football's a bit more of an open sport to be allowing trainers and physios on and
yeah, you know, I agree with that.
Especially the size of some of the physios that I have seen down in the lower leagues. It could be construed as another centre half. So, I definitely disagree with that one. But they find loopholes. It's down to the officials to make sure those loopholes are closed up as best as possible. If the referee isn't going to take a stance on it from in the first half, when it starts happening in the first half, what chance have you got? What chance has anybody got?
Another thing as well is that, and this didn't get really brought up, and I'm not saying, I think it was Toll, I'm not saying he would have put it in from 30 yards in the top corner, but when he blew for full time in Shrewsbury, it said on the scoreboard 95.7 seconds, and the Shrewsbury goalkeeper, he had two goal kicks in stoppage time that didn't take 7 seconds to take. So you've got the ball got headed out and Toll's running onto it from 25, 30 yards. So, okay, he could have had an attempt and tried to put it in the top corner, or he could have controlled it and put it out wide and we could have gone again. But I thought, for all the stoppage time, for all the time wasting, and even in the stoppage time itself, there were still elements of it. To not give Bolton the benefit of a doubt and just blow up after 7 seconds afterwards, I thought it was poor. And it's just the referees that are just... It's so frustrating because we said at the start of the season we knew this would happen. They would play this they'd do it for 2 or 3 weeks, get a few headlines, and it would go back to the same old story. And I agree with you, it's not the players' fault. it's the referee's fault. They never deal with it every week. They just let it happen. And then Bolton score, and then we get booked for it. It's just, it's poor. And yeah, something needs to happen for it. I think the start of the season was too much. You can't be having 20 minutes worth of stoppage time every week. But they need to think of something, a way of dealing with it, because players are going down. They are not injured. The goalkeeper one annoys me the most.
Yeah, send us your emails in. If you've got any ideas of how we could possibly tackle time wasting, this is how to get in touch. So you want to bring something up on the Buff? Email Mark and Henry on thebuffmail@gmail.com. That's thebuffmail, all one word, @gmail.com. And sorry to the mail escort, who probably getting some unsolicited Bolton Wanderers correspondence from the people who spell that incorrectly. Very quick, who are you?
Blink, and you missed him.
Who are you?
Here today, gone tomorrow.
Who are you?
Blink, and you missed him.
Who are you?
Here today, gone tomorrow.
Who are you?
This week, the letter is W. Henry, have you got your Josh Dacres Cogliometer fresh from its appearance at the EFL Team of the Year Awards, by the way?
Yeah, that was a 10. It was off the Dacres Cogli scale, that one. Yeah, I have got it. I forgot to take it to the Isle of Man with me, didn't I? So it's back here. It's charged up. It's ready to go.
Got two for you. Two good ones as well. So, number one, do you remember Reece Wibara?
Yes. He was on loan, wasn't he? Was he on loan from City, I want to say? Was he on loan?
He wasn't on loan. No, he signed a short-term contract. He was a Bolton player, effectively. Very, very short-term contract.
Don't know who I'm thinking of.
It's the same. It'll be the same guy. So Parkey's team, 2016-17, played one game against Bristol Rovers. He was a right-back. Did play at Manchester City. You're quite right. But that game against Bristol Rovers was the last of his professional career. He just turned it in. He was 27, I think, at the time, 26, 27. Quit football completely because he had business interests. He had a fashion chain called Manier de Voir. I don't know how fashion conscious you are, Henry, but that chain isn't doing too badly now. So he originally set the business up with his mates, put 15 grand of his savings into the business. And 10 years later, guess how much it's making?
16
grand, yeah. No, £35 million a year. And they've got a shop on Oxford Street in London.
Oh, wow. Well done to him. He was probably better that he could pack it in then.
That's it. I mean, if you're not getting a game for Bolton in League One, to think you've got a career option that, like, I saw this, right? I'm just going to go and make £35 million a year as a fashion guru. It just gives everybody hope, really. I suppose every single substitute in the whole division should just think about their options. Maybe, you know, look down, look at your trousers and your shirt, and is it fashionable enough? Could you go and do a Reece Wibara? Who knows?
Yeah, well, you got to have 15 grand's worth of savings, first of all.
That rules out me and you, I know that, but that's fair enough. How interesting was it, though? What's the Josh Dacres Cogliometer scale?
Yeah, 7. Yeah, seven. Good for him. Good for him.
Solid 7 to Chris. So the second one is from Martin. Ray Westwood. Do you know Ray Westwood?
No.
Oh, well, he is really quite a famous Bolton player for lots of reasons. But he took over the number 11 shirt from the great Ted Vizard.
Oh, I've heard of him.
Yes, he played 333 games for Bolton, scored 144 goals. He shared 61 league goals with Jack Milsom in the 1934-1935 season. And that's actually until Tuesday night, was the second highest goals season. 109 they scored that season. So this current one now, They are on 111. They are 9 behind Colin Todd's 1996-97 team. So who knows? But yes, this was a very high scoring one. Promotion from the second division to the first division, along with Brentford. Anyway, so he was Nat Lofthouse's hero. Imagine being Nat Lofthouse's hero, Ray.
Wow.
And Martin, who nominated this one, said he was also his father's hero as well. So proof that football does run in the blood. Ray Westwood's uncle, David Stokes, played 420 games for Bolton between 1902 and 1920. Ray, in turn, now this is one, I think I knew it, but I didn't know it well enough to repeat it. Ray Westwood was uncle to the great Duncan Edwards, who of course played for United and England and died in the Munich air disaster. Uncle of Duncan Edwards, never realised there was that connection. He was like Hollywood good looking, by the way. Hollywood good looking, absolute like cigarette card darling, if you will. But he was also the pre-war poster boy for Brill Cream. And Martin says he was paid 5 shillings, which is about 25 quid, for his image rights. And his face was everywhere for Brill Cream. All over the world, he was the guy for Brill Cream. Incredible, huh?
That is... I love the older ones. I love when there's links to... I mean, that said, everything. Lofthouse's hero, links to like Duncan Edwards, Brill Cream. Like, I'm throwing up a strong... Is it a 9? No, 8.5.
An 8.5. It's one of the leaders. I don't think we've touched 9. We may have touched 9.
Oh, we had 10. That was the... I mean, Russell Holt was up there. I'll give him that.
It's true. And more for shock value, but...
Yeah. And then who was it who was the... Did he become a reporter and was on the Munich... Oh, it was meant to be on the Munich...
Oh, yeah.
Light.
Oh, yeah.
Who was that?
I can't remember.
Anyway.
It was another old one, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't David Jack, I think. Was it David Jack?
Yeah, no. It was David Jack. It was David Jack. David Jack was a great story.
Yeah, that got a 10.
Yeah. Okay. Well, definitely he's right up there, Ray Westwood. Thank you very much for Chris and to Martin for those nominations. To see out today's show, this week's show, rather, let's make some predictions.
Pass us me crystal ball. What's happening next week?
Prediction time indeed, and there's only 2 more regular season games to go. Port Vale on Saturday. They have had a sad old season. They are relegated if Burton get pretty much anything and they don't win at the weekend. There's going to be lots of maths at play, I think, on Saturday afternoon. But basically, they're 3 points off safety. So they need to make sure they better Burton's result and give themselves a chance going into that final weekend. Which may make them dangerous opponents, potentially, Henry.
Maybe. I don't know. Of what I've seen of Port Vale's results, I think they gave up a few weeks ago. They've had some shockers, but this is just typical, isn't it? Typical for Bolton. What will happen is they'll either dig in, and Bolton will eventually just scrape a 1-0, which will then do no one any good because we'll be still like 5 or 6 goals off Derby, or we'll win 5 or 6-0 and it'll give us all a bit of hope again. But, the pressure's off a little bit, so that tells me that Bolton will do quite well. We tend to when the pressure's off. But, Port Vale, I think, are gone. I think maybe they've got one big performance left in them, but I think they're gone. And I think it'll be for Bolton just how they deal with it. The pressure will be off. I don't suspect it will be a 25,000 attendance again. Port Vale, I think, sold out their allocation last year, and I'd be surprised if they've done it again. I think Bolton will be fine. I can see Charles maybe starting, Charles and Collins, giving him a go, because I guess if you're going to try that formation, you might as well do it against Port Vale. The defence is there to be shot at, and you know, there's not really much on it for Bolton, really. So, I mean, what do you think? Do you think there's more to this story than what I've just said, or is it quite a simple?
I think Port Vale will be more competitive than what you potentially expect there. I think whilst there is an opportunity, they'll scrap. They're a funny team, Vale. Occasionally you look at them and they're not too bad at all, but they have been poor this season. There's no question about that. And recent results, as you say, may well have taken a bit too much out of them. But Bolton, again, whether there's 20-odd thousand in the stadium or not, there's expectation on them to win. They haven't always handled that very well. They need to go out there and they need to win well. They need to make sure there is the maximum amount of pressure they can put on Derby is to make sure that they have got a few goals on the board. And maybe Derby are looking over the shoulder and like, oh, well, you know, we need to win this. We need to win this. So psychology comes into play. I agree with you. I think if they're going to try anything, it's a little bit of a free hit in as much as whatever team gets named there needs to have one eye on the playoffs. I think if there's any doubt over Santos, if there's any doubt over Sheehan or Jones, don't play them. Play the same team if need be. They are capable of going and getting that result. They obviously do have to make a change with, bringing Dion Charles on a bit, and whether that means a start, I don't know. But they do need to make sure he gets enough game time to be able to use him in the playoffs. Dan and Undlu the same. Maybe a couple of tinkers. I'd like to see Aaron Morley get a start, to be honest, and really, you know, give him a chance to go and do something, particularly if there's any doubts over Sheehan. You know, we haven't really seen the best of Aaron Morley this season, sadly, so I would like to get him out there. Randall Williams as well. I thought that better looked a bit tired on Tuesday night. Williams hasn't really played a lot recently and kind of got off the boil a little bit as a result. So, yeah, I'd like to see him get out there as well. A few changes. Nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But I think that lack of pressure, potentially, on the whole thing might work in Bolton's favour in terms of that result. I think it'd be 3-0 Bolton. 3-0 Bolton, that's what I'm going for.
Yeah, I can't imagine it be... Yeah, I can't imagine it be too much different. I think the position Bolton are in at the moment, they've got to go for it and try and get the goal difference. So, I mean, you never know. Kachunga could have one last hurrah for Bolton and score the winner against Derby. For me, you look at the playoffs, and as you said, as we've said before, it doesn't. I don't think it necessarily matters whether we finish third or fourth, to be honest. You know, I think you avoid probably the best team of Peterborough. The rest of them are kind of Barnsley, as we said. I don't know what's happened to them, and then the rest who are fighting for the playoffs. You'd fancy that we would be maybe trying to avoid Blackpool. So I don't know. It's for me, you might as well, like you said, don't risk any of the... There's no point risking the likes of Santos and Sheehan, because if we lose the game, we're still finishing third or fourth. It doesn't actually matter. So you either go hell for leather for second or you rest players. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think the result, the performance still matters. I think you still want momentum going into the playoffs. You don't want to be sort of casting off two results now and then... Even going to Peterborough and maybe surrendering some sort of psychological advantage, you still want a performance. But I think it is just a case of keeping plates spinning and making sure that the players are on the way back and have got enough game time now. That's in my head. On the off chance, and it will flip like a switch, by the way, if Agent Catcher does what he has been instructed to do, and goes and scores a goal early on, you will see a completely different mood shift. The whole place will change, however many are in that stadium on the weekend. So, yeah, you've just got to wait and see. But Bolton have just got to go and do their job. Be professional, get out there, get some, you know, attacking front foot football. Hopefully that brings some goals. Just to put as much pressure on Derby as they can do. Because if Derby win, and you know, whatever happens with Bolton, you know, Selavi, the last game of the season, it's a bit of a free hit again. It's just basically a sharpening exercise for the likes of Dion Charles or what have you, and we all go down and have a couple of beers at Peterborough and happy days. But yeah, I think I do have a strong suspicion there will be at least a few minutes on Saturday where we're all thinking, hang on, wait a minute, something might happen here. You wait and see.
Okay, well, hopefully it's longer than a few minutes, but we'll see next week when we do the podcast what mood we're in.
Indeed, indeed. We'll bring the sad music out if needs be, but until that point in time, just once again, good luck to my friends in Cambridge. Good luck to Agent Catcher. Good luck to the Natural History Museum. Good luck to Lindsay, who does the pies and the coffees and such like for the press. Good luck to my mate Stephen, who's the local journalist. Good luck to anybody else in Cambridge. I was going to say good luck to Stephen Hawking, but I'd probably say no to that one now. I think has he been cancelled? I mean, he's not with us anymore. I know he's died. Sorry, Stephen. But anyway, good luck to anybody involved in Cambridge. Do us a favour. We'll set a university challenge. How about that?
Well, I mean, I'll be getting less points than probably what Cambridge will be getting on Saturday if we added a university challenge.
We'll do a university challenge. If Cambridge beat Derby next week, we'll be doing university challenge and Henry, rather, will be taking on somebody else. We'll do a proper quiz. We'll have a proper decent end of season show. But anyway, until that point in time, I've been Mark Isles,
and I've been Henry Hewitt.
This has been the Buff.